as we think about our role, why we're here on the earth, what we're doing here. Are we working just payday to payday? Are we struggling from family vacation to family vacation? Are we wondering about why it is we're here? I want you to keep something in mind, especially if you have a chance to pull up that old high school photograph of yourself and put it next to your photograph today. Just look at it. 5 minutes, 3 minutes, a couple of minutes of contemplation. What have you done from then until now? Have you wasted your time? Have you learned what you wanted to learn? Maybe not. Maybe that's why you're here at X Squared Radio tonight. I am too. And I'm glad you're here with me. My name is Brooks Agnew. This program is called X Squared Radio. This is where we explore the mysteries of the universe and of the earth. We interview guests from time to time because we like it. And if I like to interview them, then you're probably going to like listening to them too. We have a couple of items we just want to cover really quickly. Don't forget, Remembering the Future is my fourth book. This one is Remembering the Future, the Physics of the Soul and Time Travel. If you're interested in such things, it's a pretty short book, a little over 200 pages. It's a good read. It will give you an idea what you can do to work the law of attraction for yourself. And you can pick it up in ebook form right now. And if you're not a big ebook fan, don't fret, because when you buy the ebook, you're going to get 25% off the printed version, which in about 50 days is coming off the presses. When it comes off, we will contact you back with a 25% off coupon, and then you'll get the autographed printed version of it to set on your shelf while the knowledge is already cooking in your head. You can use it as a reference book, share it with a friend, but you'd help us out by going to rememberingthefuturebook.com, rememberingthefuturebook.com, and pick it up for yourself. I think you'll like it. Also, if you like the things we're talking about tonight, you can read in detail. You can see a lot of first-hand photographs taken of this stuff, and certainly some in-depth research by picking up the Arc of Millions of Years series at arcofmillionsofyears.com. The trilogy is packaged nicely and affordably. We give it to you free shipping anywhere in the United States. We also ship to Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and Europe, and yes, even Japan. We are working on a Spanish translation for the book and a Chinese translation for the books, but those take some time. But if you can read English, these are the books for you. Forward Magazine called them the most comprehensive book ever written on the 2012 end times. In this hour, we're going to speak to the Director of Research and Exploration, Rich Tellman. He's going to be coming on with us in about 4 minutes. So my producer's going to call him in. We'll be back in 40 seconds with X Squared Radio. Tighten up your seatbelt, because we're getting ready to take off a little bit faster. Hey, don't forget, you can go to heavensabove.com. That's heavens-above.com. And you can find out when the International Space Station is coming over you. Starting tomorrow, between 8 and 10 p.m., actually 8 and 11 p.m., every single night for the next 10 days, you'll be able to see the International Space Station come overhead the Eastern Seaboard. If you live anywhere near Charlotte, that's between 8 and 11 p.m., and I trust me, if you've never seen it go overhead, your jaw is going to drop. Take your friends out and have a look at that thing going overhead. It's amazing. It's larger than Jupiter from your perspective now. Not actually larger than Jupiter, although that would be way cool. And it goes overhead in about 3 or 4 minutes. It's very quick across the sky. So we'll get Rich on here in just a minute. My producer's working on that, and we'll bring that information to you right away. If you want to be part of the program, remember, it's 415-762-1161 anywhere, on planet or off planet. If you can get to a cell phone tower, it's 415-762-1161. I also want to reiterate our call, our open call for any UFO evidence. Any UFO evidence. I took a picture of one. But if you manage to snag one in your backyard, I'm on an airplane, okay? I'm on an airplane. If you happen to have an interaction with an off-worlder, if you can get him to come on the radio, we want to change the world right here, right now. So I'm not saying I don't believe. I'm not saying I do believe. I'm a scientist. Those of you that have been listening to this program for 5 years know that. Belief is not part of the equation. We want evidence. We want proof. And if we can give the world proof, we start shifting the mean consciousness of the human race. And that changes everything.
No, don't search.
All right. With us now, the Director of Research and Education Exploration, Rich Tellman. Welcome to the program, Rich.
Thank you, Brooks.
Rich and I made contact a couple of days ago. Synergy is really a strange thing, because Rich had made contact with me telling me he had this ancient spearhead. And I mean, you're really going to be fascinated when you hear this. And then, within a couple days, my contact, my very trusted, highly high-integrity contact, returned from ancient lands with exclusive first-hand photographs of the dig going on in front of the Sphinx. Wow, how pieces come together. Anyway, start us off, Rich. Where do we go from here?
Well, I can only tell you what I've found. 4 years ago, I was on my dad's property with my little boy, and we were just kind of playing in the woods, and he was riding up and down my dad's road, and he came running up to me, and he says, "Dad, look what I found." And I'm thinking he's got a walnut or something, you know. And in his hand, he had a metal arrowhead embedded in stone. And I didn't know the weight of, I didn't know the weight of what had just, been handed to me, you know. But from there, I felt like I was kidnapped by some type of spirit where I was being telepathically channeled. And I followed eating utensils and chippings for about 2 years. And finally, let's just say it led me to an ancient civilization that's just they were exquisite artists, and they were covered by an ancient sea, and then the glaciers re-exposed what had happened.
Well,
an ancient civilization that I believe that glaciers have uncovered in the Midwest of the United States.
Wow. Well, let's talk about the importance of what it means to have an iron spearhead embedded in stone.
Yeah, I believe it's hematite from what I've gathered, from Michael Cremo and Dr. Carl Baugh, who has a metal hammer embedded in stone with a coalified handle. I spoke with him and just from local experts, I believe it's hematite, which is one of the main constituents of iron. And I would be interested in knowing the date of a relic like this. And what would be the right, the right approach? Would it be an isotope type of testing? To date the metal, I'm imagining it's billions of years old. To see limestone can form in shorter periods of time, but I don't know. I've been told that even something with this type of density even takes millions of years, but that's a whole disputable thing. Time is something that, I don't know. know.
Yeah, how, I don't know. I'm not a geologist.
I've been told that coal can form within years, not even 10 years, under the right pressure, is what I've heard. So I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not a geologist per se, although I've certainly spent a lot of time in job trailers out on drill sites with geologists. But I don't really know how long it takes sandstone to form. I would imagine because of its soft...
This is actually limestone, I would believe. I'm sure there's sand in there, but it is... I believe it's an ocean... See, hematite itself is an oceanic element. It's known to be in the oceanic crust. So
that's right. You did say limestone.
I believe it's somehow coming from the Earth's core. Well, they say there's a 500-mile ball of iron spinning in the middle of the Earth, and that could be what's causing our magnetic gravitational pull. You know, gravity.
Yep, but it could be a little larger than that.
No, it's amazing. So right now, it's in the history books, they say that the Spanish brought metal weaponry to the Americas, but the primitive man had been carving this metal, metal that comes from the earth, not necessarily a smeltered thing, but they carved the elements that were there, and I have met.
Hematite's pretty hard, isn't it? It's much harder than just regular old iron.
And there.
I'm sorry, you broke up a little bit there. I was
pictures. You notice there's a face in the metal.
Oh, really?
So, with a good zoom, you can get in there and you can actually see a face in this arrowhead, which is a pretty neat little thing.
Now you say that it's carved.
So since then, okay, what we found is what all of this has led me to is I found what I believe is it's an.
I don't know. I don't want what's happening. The phone line's dropping out a little bit. I wanted to ask the question, if the hematite is so hard, what kind of tool would they use to carve it? If it's iron, maybe they had to use heat it up really hot and then use another iron tool or stone of some kind to beat it into shape, a lot like we do, hammer out a sword that's red hot. But I don't know how you machine or manipulate hematite. Would you have an idea? Nope, I guess we've lost that phone call. We'll try for the studio. I'll try him back, and we'll get him back on. We'll get a little better connection. That's no problem. If we have any experts and metallurgists out there who know the density of hematite, the Rockwell of hematite, what kind of tools it would take to be able to fashion a rock of it into a spearhead, and if you had the technology to make hematite into a spearhead, what in the world would you be using a spearhead for? Wouldn't you have more modern weaponry than a spearhead? It's sort of like making spearheads out of titanium. If you can manipulate titanium and turn it into a workable metal, surely you have the technology where you don't any longer need a spearhead. So that's kind of my thought, kind of like a carbon fiber horse and buggy. If you have any ideas about that or have any input, it's 415-762-1161, anywhere on planet or off planet. We're getting Rich back as we speak, and we'll talk a little bit more about this mysterious spearhead. By the way, you know, don't think this is too strange that you're just walking along the farm one day and up pops an arrowhead. For instance, in the areas around North Carolina, the Appalachia, eastern Kentucky, middle Tennessee, the Indians, Native Americans, and even races older than that proliferated in the area. And we're not talking about hundreds of spearheads. We're talking about millions of spearheads. Well, you would think, you know, year after year, you'd pick over just about all the land. But what happens in the wintertime when it rains or when it snows is that the earth moves around a little bit. Soil moves kind of psychically, especially in non-clay areas where it's less solid ground. And believe it or not, fields can grow rocks. I've picked the rocks out of my front yard for a couple of years after I built my new house. It seemed to just grow rocks. So you just walk around from time to time, pick up the rocks, and throw it over to the next field. Those of you that have colonial ancestors immigrants in the 1700s or early 1800s, they're very familiar with this. Every spring, you go out and plow, and when you plow, up come the rocks. So it's not uncommon to have something that a glacier dragged along a sediment area, crushed into a piece of limestone, and preserved for posterity to pop its way to the surface where a small boy could find it and pack it back to his father. Now we have evidence of something ancient, something, a piece of technology, a use of technology that is far beyond what current archaeologists are saying is the timeline for modern man. And this is what we're trying to correct here on this program. If we can get the textbooks to agree that times are changing. In fact, we're learning more and more about our past, and what we thought was fact is now back in the realm of theory, and there are other hypotheses which need to be worked out. I believe Rich is back with us. Welcome back, Rich.
Hi. Hi, Brooks. Sorry about that.
So I was asking the question, how hard is hematite? I mean, does this have the same Rockwell? Rockwell, by the way, is a measurement of hardness. Does it have the same Rockwell as, say, iron?
Yeah, it's very dense. It has a beautiful tarnish to it. It has a reflective quality. It's a very dense, beautiful metal. I would imagine that whoever created it was probably working it with fire.
So they heated
that,
it very
like,
hot, and then bang.
Density, like it may have been hammered.
Yeah, pounded in shape with another rock. Well,
so,
if you had the ability to manipulate iron or hematite in this fashion, why in the world would you make a spearhead? I mean, it's sort of like a titanium spearhead or a carbon fiber or horse and buggy.
Yeah, it's about an inch and a quarter, so I would say it may have been more arrow. It could have been on a spear, but it would be, I would imagine that it is actually an arrowhead.
Wow, now that's something
that even changes the whole thing,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, because you might have a spear, but you might have 50 arrows.
Yeah, well, this thing is small, so... But if they were using, that even changes the whole thing. Were they using bows, you know? And how elemental is that?
Well, true. What would you need to penetrate with an iron arrowhead?
I think archaeology is... whoever's writing the history books, I mean, somehow these alternative scientists who are... finding all of these amazing discoveries that are just like earth shaking. The things that are being found right now the history books need to be rewritten, and I believe that people like I don't want to go into names, but there are a group of alternative scientists that are the History Channel's, you know, got them on there all the time, and their conventional science needs to be readdressed. They've got way too much power. The things that they're teaching us, I believe, are, you know, they have an agenda, and I don't believe it's necessarily to the betterment of the human species.
Well,
you know,
one would have to ask, you know, why in the world would they create a history that wasn't true? You know, if the truth is what we're after, if the truth is what we pride ourselves in, and what we receive self-satisfaction of sharing with our students, why in the world would a history teacher open a history book and teach something which he knows, and even worse, his students already know, isn't true?
Right. When all of this occurred, it brought up, it kind of threw me midstream into, like... the evolution, the evolution versus creation. I didn't want to, when I set out in this, my agenda was not to prove or disprove either of the two. But now that I'm finding things that are, I believe that I could have found the human element over a in sediments over a billion years old. So, Jonathan Gray said, if any human being was ever found in Carboniferous strata, that it should change the way that history and the world is viewed as far as the antiquity of humanity. Are you there? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm here. I just hear a little bit of noise
got a bad
in the background.
Connection. I believe man could have been here, like, from very, very near the beginning, in volcanic and asteroid-ridden country.
Well, it could be.
But the dinosaurs.
Are we making an assumption?
And dinosaurs, we've got a real bad connection.
Yeah, maybe we want to try this again. Maybe I don't know, it seems to be going away. But if it doesn't go away, we'll get the producer to make another connection. My question is, are we sure that these were humans using these tools?
Brooks, I'm going to call right back.
All right, that's what we need to do. So that would be my question to you as well, Earth Explorers. I know there are lots of you out there. In the first hour, we covered the dig in front of the Sphinx, and we're going to cover that a little bit more in the next hour. Rich is going to be with us for this hour. We're going to talk about this billion-year-old civilization that he discovered in the Midwest. Now, we're not going to give the exact location because I don't want you jumping in your SUVs and grabbing your shovels and going out there and ruining the whole thing. We'll do this in an organized way, official way, so that the truth comes out and we'll get some civilian oversight and try to see what's going on over there. This is something that changes our perspective. We realize that Earth wasn't made in 6,000 years, and certainly man hasn't only been on the Earth for 6,000 or 7,000 or 8,000 years. He's been here a long, long time, and he has reached levels of technology that defy explanation. And that's what we're trying to do here, is we're trying to explain it, we're trying to explore it, and we want you along for the trip, because the exploration is what makes life interesting. So, now we have Rich back. Let's see if we have a better connection. Are you there?
Yeah. Hi.
All right. Much clearer.
Anyway, the Flintstones just went through my mind after I lost you there. They should never have put on the Flintstones if they didn't want me to think man and dinosaurs existed together. Yeah. And then nobody told me they didn't. So, I started finding even sculptures that are showing dinosaurs in them. And
well,
it's
maybe,
pretty amazing.
Maybe cartoons are the way that they really get the truth out there. So, Barney and Fred are really educators. So now you're saying that you have found ancient art or pottery with art on it that have a co-presence of humans and dinosaurs at the same time?
Yeah. Well, what happened is I was rocking my shower stall in my basement because my son and I were moving into my basement and getting ready for this Ozark winter. So I was looking for stones to put in my basement, and on the top of this pile was this piece of sandstone looking up and smiling at me. So from when that happened, I'm getting another call in. Let's just say when I found this that sandstone skull almost part of my shower.
I can see
anyway,
that. I was walking along a road in Egypt one time, and on the side of this walkway was a literal avalanche of little white stones, almost like unbelievable. They just blown it up with dynamite or something and shoveled it over there. It was a huge amount, dozens and dozens of tons of these things. Walking along, minding my own business, I look down, and what do I see? A fully petrified clam. So I put it in my pocket and took it home. Yeah,
I know. I said, we are discovery is learning that we all live at the bottom of an ancient ocean, you know? I believe that this ancient civilization, that this glacier has most likely uncovered was Lemuria. I would have to say it was Lemuria. And I can only say that is if this oceanic strain of humanity with this bone coming off the back, I was able to find it in the Human Origins Museum in Italy, in multiple areas in their archives. So I was able to find it there. I found it in the desert past Turkey. I found it in the Mayan glyphs, this protrusion from the back of the skull. What I believe this is the original man that existed upon the earth when it was 96% ocean. It's just the oceanic element that I'm finding in all these sculptures that just, I used to say Atlantis, but that's only if Atlantis had this type of, I want to go back to the Anunnaki almost because, it is human, but then it's a mix. And when I say missing, I've been saying it's the missing link of creation because I believe that it shows humans existing in sediments older than any primate fossils ever found.
Sure, I could see that.
I believe, yeah.
Yeah, and the fact that you've dated it about this time makes sense too because the Ozarks, the Appalachians, that area is some of the oldest land that we have on this continent. And when you consider that the land areas are all somewhere between 2 and 4 billion years old, the Earth is actually about 4.5 billion years old. But, you know, it takes a while to cool once you collapse from an accretion disk. So as far as it being able to support life, we had to give the algae a few hundred million years to change all the carbon dioxide and methane into oxygen. And oil and those kinds of things so that, you know, once the algae works on something for a few hundred million years, then you have an atmosphere loaded with oxygen and now it's ready for carbon dioxide emitting oxygen consuming beings, namely humanoids. But like you said, if it's pre-billion year old, it's quite possible the Earth was still expanding in those years because many people don't know it, but the ocean floor, the oldest ocean floor that we have measured is only 70 million years old. The youngest is around 10 million, and we haven't even measured the Arctic bottom. It's sitting at 4,400 meters, and we just haven't taken samples off the bottom yet. It could be 15 or 20 million years old. Well, that's a baby compared to dry land, the land that we walk upon. So this billion-year-old...
So does that mean that the original...
I was going to say the billion-year-old dry land is the place where people lived. And it had to be high land at that.
I had this thought that everywhere that man exists today... the dry land used to be seas, and everywhere that is now ocean could very well have one point been dry land. Is that not possible?
Well, yes, at one point. And if you really look at the age difference between the seafloor and the dry land, the seafloor is recently formed, which means the crust expanded like a balloon blowing up and the crust cracking open and filling in with molten material. And then cracking open and filling in with molten material. Some planets don't make it. They fly apart like an asteroid belt, or they spit off a piece of themselves like a giant moon, like Mercury was once part of Venus. But some planets, like Earth, they just crack and fill in, crack and fill in, crack and fill in, and so the crust
and then recover over themselves, right? Plates.
Yeah, it just fills in, and then what happens is the sea recedes and goes to the low-lying areas, which is that new seabed, and so you end up with oceans and continents.
Well, I was talking to a friend, talking about channeling and the telepathic ability. I was talking to a friend earlier, and I said, and I brought up the fact that I'm finding these faces in lava and like earth-forming metals. Well, an hour after that, I went into this creek in the city, which is not even on my discovery site, and I found this face in lava with a perfect hole through the eye. It looks like it was something that you would find, you know, it was amazing. You're finding faces in lava. I feel like they were trying to prove that they existed in these elements, you know?
Isn't that wild? When you think about this, Rich, when you think about as you're going over your ancient site there and being very careful to preserve things and report things correctly, do you think about their daily lifestyle? How did they get through a day, through a winter?
It looks to me that they were very preoccupied with leaving a legacy. They were trying to say something in the rocks. They were trying to show, I feel like they were trying to show the intention, almost an intention of the human species. The fact that you're having the duplicity of two species in the same effigy, they were showing humans existing with this animal-like, almost space creature. So I believe that, the fact that I found this astronaut air tube after this, and you want to talk telepathy, I mean, it just feels like I believe that when the Earth was covered much by ocean, that extra did visit the Earth. I don't want to take a stance, but I'm finding that evidence, you know.
Well, you know, oftentimes we think about anthropology, we think about the development of mankind. Maybe we think about it from an evolutionary point of view, that apes were here and then something happened and genes got spliced and man was formed. But what we're really finding, honestly, is we're finding that man has been around a long, long time. Now, Rich has got evidence that based on the geology in which these artifacts are being found, somewhere around a billion years old, it looks like man was here before the apes.
Are you there?
Yeah, I just asking the question.
Oh, I'm getting clicks. People are dialing in.
Oh yeah, they're all saying, "Hey, Rich, I hear you on the radio. What's going on?"
Yeah, exactly. Right. Now I can only hear like 2/3 of the words you're saying. You know. I just hope that this discovery can blossom into a real tool in finding the truth of our origins, and I don't know. I'm seeing the human element among dinosaurs, and I'm what could appear to be extraterrestrial. But you know, I've read things from the 1800s that were saying that humans could exist on other planets, that they're, just because we call them extraterrestrials, that they said that we all belong to one brotherhood, a brotherhood of humanity, you know. So that's called Men on Other Planets, and it was written by Swing. There's a book called Pearls from Many Seas, and in that book there's a passage called Men from Other Planets, and it talks about actually humans existing on other planets and traveling the solar system. So I don't know.
Well, you know, I would like to say I believe in that. What I would really like to see is somebody open up a cave or open up a cavern in which somebody parked their old ship and couldn't get it off the planet, and here it is in some kind of condition where we can look at it. Like I said, the interesting thing to me is that you have found a hematite spearhead that has been smashed into a limestone rock. Somehow the limestone rock broke open, and there's the spearhead embedded in it. If they had the technology to work
such... formed around it at the bottom of the sea.
Yeah, exactly.
Even the sea bottom actually solidified around it.
So the point is that they had the technology to work iron, and yet they were still making arrowheads out of it. It's like I was saying when we were trying to redial you up. It's a little bit like discovering a carbon fiber buggy that's horse-drawn. If they have the ability to make the carbon fiber, why are you still using horse-drawn equipment? If you have the ability to work advanced metals like that, hard metals, and make artifacts and make tools out of it, you realize iron can go, especially iron that dense, can go through just about anything. You can work any kind of stone, any kind of wood. You know, why would you still be using arrowheads and a bow?
Yeah, my dad even raised the question, because I'm finding all of these axes, like ocean axes, tomahawks and stuff. And my dad says, why would you, he's a skeptic, and he says, why would they form axes out of such soft sediment? And it's because it's oceanic. And I said, Dad, that's all they had. It was ocean land. They were living on a reef, you know? So I believe that these artists used by the elements that they were using, it was dating the elements that were available to them and plentiful on the earth at that time. And I'm just seeing it very, very ancient, like volcanic, in a volcanic situation. Possibly at the time, I'm believing that it could have been when Yellowstone erupted last. I believe they say, I'm guessing that it's somewhere around 600 million years ago. But who knows? It seems like a... May I read you what I was talking about, Swing, Men on Other Planets? It's a quick paragraph.
Yeah, sure. A paragraph is fine.
Okay. The vastness of the universe renders foolish the supposition that this little planet is the only inhabited one, and the unity of laws and of substances asks us to imagine the beings upon other spheres to be moving to and fro in the likeness of man, speaking a language and busied by the useful and the beautiful. We may even assume that such is the oneness of intelligent life, that if these inhabitants of different planets were to meet in some general home in immortality, they would prove to be of one race, a human race, having different minor details of history, but all members of one brotherhood and capable of one friendship, one virtue, one taste, one piety, 10,000 worlds full of one music, one art, one tenderness, one creature, man, one God. Anyway.
Yeah, incredible. It sounds like it needs to be part of the preamble of the Bill of Rights. When we look at constitutions, creeds, parliaments, kingdoms, governments, we look at the patriotism of that individual nation or that individual tribe or province as opposed to all other nations, as opposed to all other tribes. And that isn't, I believe, the ultimate or the optimum condition of mankind. To have divided ourselves into countless numbers of counties and tribes and townships and different patriotisms, and dividing ourselves in wealth, in education, in benefits to health and clean water, to the ability to travel and obtain knowledge, this isn't the way the civilization of man is supposed to work. What Rich just read is the way the civilization of man is supposed to work. I really enjoyed that. So what is your feeling when you're out there on your dig, you're out there on your site? I suppose in the Ozarks you can sort of go out in the wintertime. You don't have really terrible winters like they do up north, but still they can be pretty brutal.
Sticks to the ground.
Yeah, exactly. What do you feel when you're out there alone? Do you hear the voices? Do you hear perhaps the ancient ripple of their intelligence or their consciousness while you're out there?
That's so funny you say that. Sometimes when I feel like I'm on, I mean, I believe all ground is holy ground, but when I'm in the middle of something sacred, and all of a sudden you feel this, like the wind and the trees, and you can, and it is, it's like you can feel the spirits of ancient man, the spirits of the elements that my hands are going through. I don't know if it's the exact same thing, but it's pretty amazing. It's like they sweep up and they say, "That's us," you know.
You're not out there with a front loader and a forklift like this shaft they're digging in
no,
the front of the Sphinx right
no,
now.
No, I load everything up in the front of my T-shirt. I use it as a cradle. I carry it all in my... We use buckets, but, I mean, usually we're just pockets full of snail faces, you know.
Interesting.
That's the beautiful thing that we found is these artists started using these... We call it ammonized facialization. They used these snails to create eyes and mouths in these sculptures, and then they would get in there and carve the teeth and stuff. But like I said, when it's that they were trying to let us know what elements were available to them, it's just got that ocean. It just drips of ocean, you know. It's beautiful. It's just an amazing thing. Now, I want to say something in my heart just says Atlantis, but I think it's older, you know.
Well, you know, we have our ideas of where Atlantis and Lemuria were. We think that Atlantis, of course, in the Atlantic, and Lemuria in the southern Pacific, maybe going out as far as Hawaii. But the ocean between California and Hawaii is pretty deep. It's not like just a bimini deep, you know, 30, 40 meters deep. We're talking about several thousand feet. And of course, off of the Atlantic, you've got the Mindanao Trench going down 23,000 feet. These are rips in the skin of the earth. So when we're looking for Atlantis, we're looking for Lemuria. Maybe you're right. Maybe it's right under our own feet.
What if it's? Yeah, exactly. I feel like I say that I have found a dry land, oceanic discovery. You know, it's where there was sea. It's now dry, and you don't have to put on a bunch of scuba gear to find this stuff.
Well, you know, when you take 25E, if you're taking I-75 south and you get to 25E around Corbin, Kentucky, and you turn east and go through the Cumberlands, those mountains, and you can get up there, a couple thousand feet, 3,000 feet in some places. Mount LeConte is 6,000 feet. You see all kinds of trilobites and seashells and stuff. And this is not an area that's an overthrust area like out west. This wasn't pushed up out of the sea floor. This always was. This is one of the oldest mountain ranges in the world. Ocean covered it at one time, just like you said.
Right. And the peaks were islands. What wasn't covered, where it had receded, where the water receded after, say, a great flood, then there were little islands, and I believe that primitive man had the ability to travel between those islands.
Sure, but this would have predated the great flood by a long way. I mean,
I'm not sure exactly which I don't know how many great floods. I mean, in cataclysmic. You know,
I have somebody Skyping in, Rich.
Again, and I don't know if it's been, because don't we only have like 15,000 years or something of written history?
Well, if you don't count the Sumerian texts go back 25,000 years, and a lot of them are clay trading tablets and stories and some of them, experts like Zachariah Sitchin and others, have tried to translate. That's where we got the Anunnaki from in the first place. Rich, I have somebody Skyping in wanting to know the title of the book that you just read from.
Oh, that was called Pearls from Many Seas.
And who is that by?
It's called Men on Other Planets was the name of the piece, and it's in a book called Pearls from Many Seas, and the author who wrote that Men on Other Planets is Swing, S-W-I-N-G.
Okay. I've sent that on.
Yeah, a book in an old rare bookstore.
I like those. Whenever I go to small towns, especially in the Midwest, I love to go to the used bookstores. You never know what you're going to find in there. These guys collect everything from all of the old libraries, from people that have died in estates. They'll go in and buy all the old books.
Yeah, you can find some amazing wisdom and knowledge in those things.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I got a book on, it was called Thinking and Destiny. And this was written way back in the late 50s. And I read the book. It's incredibly thick, and you have a desire to lay it down within an hour of picking it up or less and try to digest what you've read because it's written that deeply. But it's very modern in its thinking, really made for the age of technology, which, of course, there was none of that in the 50s and early 60s. I was really, really taken aback of the foresight and terminology and references that he had in there that were quite forward thinking.
Yeah, it's almost like truth has a ring to it, and it's when you hear it and you know it, and it sounds right now, you know. No matter how old it is, if it's true, it has a ring to it, you know, a familiar ring. And so I understand what you're saying.
Well, speaking of a familiar ring, when you're out there communing with your source of knowledge, which your son has introduced you to, do you ever wonder about how the civilizations lasted? Where did they go? Did they just blend into our DNA, or did they pack up everything and leave the planet, or did they go extinct and we started over? Or do you get any kind of feelings like that?
Definitely ring in my ears is why and what is leading me to these things. Is there a higher power that wants a message to be told here, and he is channeling through me, or that source? The fact that it has this missing link of humanity, the true origin, and I believe that it makes you think and wonder, were angels just extraterrestrial or celestial beings?
Well, they couldn't be, they could be one and the same. It just depends on an interpretation. The fact that a being can go through a veil and travel across a time that we don't understand into another dimension, a dimension where maybe they could see the future pretty clearly, or maybe they could see multiple futures if we do this or don't do that, if we don't behave, if we don't change our ways. Maybe there are alternative futures that they can see, and maybe...
I do feel like something is telling me, just like you just said, something is trying to channel through me that is trying to convey a message that is saying that we need to change our ways. Definitely. Definitely, I believe that is the underlying tone here, is that we have the ability to change our ways and save ourselves from creating our own, the end of our, you know,
well,
humanity.
We have a finite amount of energy on this earth. That being said, we do have a source of energy 93 million miles away that we're learning a little bit more about every year. And we were talking about the SDO, the Solar Dynamics Observatory, in the first part of the program tonight. But that being said, we have basically a finite set of energy. And although we have a tendency to look at things as though, it's only one generation. Who cares if we use it all up? I'm not going to be around to enjoy it or to suffer through the loss or the darkness or the nuclear winter or fill in the blank. But there are a vast majority of us who are somewhat silent, or we're inspired. And I get the feeling that you're inspired, who feel as though There is a way to live within the limits of the planet and still have a really, really abundant life.
Exactly. Yeah, it saddens me, you know, with all the fossil fuel thing, you know. I look at these horses in the Midwest here, and you see these beautiful animals that are just standing still up against trees, and I feel like it was the beauty of the horse, and that whole time has been, in the last 100 years, this animal has just, like, taken a, we don't use the horse as transportation or for anything anymore, and it's just like a species of beauty is just being swept aside, you know.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. For thousands of years,
I feel like technology, the same thing that modern science is, and technology, they've kind of got us into the position we are now. So I don't know. I don't want to sound bitter.
Well, I'm not bitter either. But I do. You know, we get to a point where we have enough technology that we don't have to spend a majority of our day tilling the ground, planting seeds, harvesting, grinding, you know, aging, baking, yeah, you know, sewing our own clothes, making our own yarn, you know, growing wool and all that on sheep and shearing it. We've divided up our efforts. We work as a team.
I have some favorite little dinosaur bowls. These primitive men have carved these bowls out of petrified dinosaur. And my neighbors worked at a coffee shop, and they would bring me these fresh beans, and I would get my pistle, turn it into a mortar and pestle, and I would grind. I would call it fresh dino grind. And there's a beauty you're dealing with those elements. It does bring you closer to the earth, and there is a beauty in doing things. There's a harmonious element there in nature, you know.
Yeah, there is something to be said about taking the time to do things. And we had Leonid Sharashkin on the program earlier in the year, and he was talking about the book Anastasia. And in the book, it describes a method of taking the seeds that you're going to plant of plants and throwing them in your mouth for about 5 or 10 minutes and let them soak up the saliva from your mouth. And then you plant them. And when the seed grows into the total plant, it uses the DNA memory that it got from you to provide the nutrients that your being needs. Locally grown squash, locally grown peas and carrots and potatoes and things like that. Well, I thought to myself, wow, that really makes, you know, scientific sense to me. Look at us now. We ship in our food from Mexico and California and wherever it's, you know, bananas and cabbage and artichokes and whatnot, kiwis, but they're not grown here. They're not grown out of the soil that makes up our body. We're being made up of soil from all over the planet. And look at us. We're full of allergies and weaknesses and failing organs and eyesights and flawed DNA. Maybe they had the right idea. So when I think about these ancient civilizations and the fact that they had to be advanced enough to get here, they had to be smart enough to outsmart nature, and yet they chose to live within nature. Don't you find that fascinating? All right, I think we dropped the call again. My producer's right on top of it, I know. But that's a good question to ask you, Earth Explorers. The phone number here is 415-762-1161. Have we got too smart for our britches? Are we living in a technological age between our iPod and our fuel-injected car that we have forgotten about our link with the very planet upon which we live? My question to you, Rich, is these people were advanced enough to be able to work iron. They were artistic and took their time and lived life within harmony with nature. Do you think this was the highest echelon of living, or do you think we have yet to achieve it?
I think it would be something, a beautiful system to return to. there is a true beauty in the things that we can find in nature. Like what you just said about the iPods and the electronic games that are my son's addicted to, Xbox and the whole thing. I believe that the further I got away from the lures of society, I was stuck out in the country for a couple years without transportation, and I got closer to the earth, and I felt the further I got away from the media and the lures of society and really took time to see where I was, and not to mention the fact that I had been sort of taught to look down all my life, you know, by a suppressed society in a way. That's, I also joke, that's why I'm so good at doing flooring and tile and stuff, is because I've been taught to look down. It's just, I feel like there's a real, I hope that this, the message in our discovery shows that man is, worthy of better things than self-destruction, you know?
Well, I want to believe that, too. I really do.
Sure.
I think that if we listen to the press all the time, we have a recycling of death and fear and on the precipice of misunderstanding. We lose perspective of who we are, what the value of humanity is, why we are here, and what message the ancients tried to leave in stone and metal and codexes and legends so that we'd have some idea of how to do it right. We lose sight of that. We get locked up in this cycle, this Xbox, PlayStation 3 mentality, and maybe we're ever learning and never coming to a knowledge of the truth. However, I have a feeling that the human race is on the verge of evolution. It really is. Even though a majority of the planet still has to walk for a day to get to a telephone, we are on the verge of evolution. Human consciousness is about to make a giant leap, not a quantum leap, a giant leap forward as a single being, as a race. And it's going to make an echo in the universe. It's going to make a reverberation. Make no mistake about that.
Well, I got distracted earlier when I was trying to say that I was thinking of a stance between evolution and creation, and I thought this, you know, I thought everything that it was created evolves, and everything that evolves was created. There's got to be a neutral stance where you're not fighting each other, you know? Evolution, everything evolves. So, but that doesn't mean that, I don't know. I believe that finding man in let's say 600 million year old sediment, just at least says that man existed then. I don't know if that means that he did or did not come from primates. I feel that the whole, I don't want to come across with a slanted view, but I really do believe that science and government are, if they can prove that we came from primates, that they can deny us our God-given rights. And I don't want to sound negative, but I feel if they can prove that we come from a lower species, then they can treat us as if we are lower. And I don't know.
They have to realize that they came from the same species. And the idea that, you know, our legacy is a primate with the IQ, you know, of an infant, with instincts, of course, but still not enough intellect to protect itself from nature with anything other than brute strength and herd mentality. We know better than that, because there, besides the fact that we have a frontal cortex with which we can figure out complex problems, we have something animals do not. We have desire. We have will. We have the ability to pull ourselves up from our own bootstraps and overcome. We also have the ability to change, which animals do not. We learn, we grow, we become merciful, we become benefactors, or we become wicked. Animals don't do that. There's an animated being inside of us that drives us past our humanity.
Wow. Beautifully said. Very well said.
Well, listen, Rich, I am overjoyed that you came on the program, especially on short notice. You've been a wonderful, wonderful guest. Again, you're the Director of Research.
I get excited. I apologize.
Oh, it's not a problem. Director of Research and Exploration for what organization?
Fossil Fields Discoveries. We have 6 YouTube movies posted, and we can be reached, may I say, the Fossil Fields email?
Sure. Give us all your contact information.
We are at thefossilfields@aol.com, and we have... We can also be reached on Facebook and MySpace. We also have an online store at www.zazzle.com/thefossilfields. We're just trying to help fund our discoveries.
That's Zazzle
anyway,
by Zazzle.
Talk again.
Is that Zazzle, Zazzle, /
yeah.
TheFossilFields.com?
www.zazzle.com/TheFossilFields.
Okay, great. We will definitely put the link on the website. Have a wonderful week, my friend, and please stay in touch.
Talk to you again very soon, sir.
All right. Thank you and good night.
Good night. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, Earth Explorers, we will take a quick 7-minute break. Maybe not the whole thing, but let you get a drink, let me change tapes, and we'll move on with the rest of our program. We have so appreciated you being with us here tonight. I'm Brooks Agnew, and this is X Squared Radio.